Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Danielle Goldfarb, a double board certified neurologist and psychiatrist and memory specialist at Banner SunHealth Research Institute. And we will be discussing the use of marijuana for dementia-related agitation. You know, Janice, marijuana for medicinal purposes has a history that dates back 5,000 years. Marijuana was said to have been an ingredient in a holy anointing oil referenced in the original Hebrew version of Exodus. The ancient Egyptians reportedly used marijuana to treat glaucoma, as well as general inflammation. And the Chinese had identified more than 100 medicinal uses for marijuana by 100 AD. But, you know, there's been a rather storied history of medical marijuana use in the United States. Actually, not too long ago, in 1840, marijuana became widely accepted in mainstream medicine and was an ingredient in many over-the-counter products. By 1850, marijuana was added to the U.S. pharmacopoeia, and it was used as a treatment for opioid withdrawal, pain, appetite stimulation, and the relief of nausea and vomiting. Through the 1930s, it was marketed as a painkiller, but in 1937, this is where the story changes a little bit. The Marijuana Tax Act was passed, which restricted marijuana use to only those that could pay a heavy excise tax for specific authorized industrial and medical uses. And by 1942, marijuana was removed from the U.S. pharmacopoeia, and doctors began to discredit marijuana as not having any medicinal use. So now we are starting to see this swing back where medicinal and even recreational use of marijuana is being legalized in the United States. You know, we have a couple generations of stigma surrounding medicinal use, so there can be hesitation when it's brought up for use, not just for Alzheimer's, but really in any disease state. But when I've seen caregivers kind of come to this point of considering cannabis, they're often at the end of their rope. They've tried everything and it just hasn't worked for them.
The history is so interesting, and thank you for sharing that. And what you brought up about caregivers being at the end of their rope, it presents a complex topic today. And our listeners might have many questions, and they might be contemplating things like, are there legitimate benefits? If so, how much should someone be taking? How much is too much? How will it affect other medications? And is it legal? Is this okay? I'm so glad we have Dr. Goldfarb with us today to answer so many questions for us. She has so much research done around this topic, and we are so grateful to have her today.
Welcome, Dr. Goldfarb. Thank you for joining our conversation.
Thank you for having me. This is a really fascinating topic, and I'm excited to discuss more about it.
We can't wait to learn more, but before we do, can you tell us a little bit more about your story, your journey, and what led you to connect with the dementia community?
My story about how I landed in the dementia world, I think, is a little different than a lot of my colleagues. Whereas many people had someone in their life or family who suffered with dementia, various forms of dementia, I actually don't have. But when I went to med school, I hadn't had anyone yet with Alzheimer's or dementia of any kind. But what I did experience was, at a young age, as a teenager, I had some pretty significant losses in my life, mainly with the death of my mother to ovarian cancer when I was 17, and subsequently moved out of my childhood home and, you know, went to college soon after. So I got very adept at grieving. And when I connected with and not just grieving, but dealing with the loss of kind of sense of self, identity, role, who am I in this world? When I landed a job before med school for a hospice dementia program, that was just a new kind of field within hospice at that time in 2005, I really connected with both the patients and the caregivers of these, you know, these are individuals who are dying of dementia. And so really seeing that the massive part of what makes these diseases so challenging is really that it's years and sometimes decades of small and large losses and grieving, and a lot of times not even realizing that you're grieving these things that maybe don't seem to be a big deal, but really are important to each individual and their sense of self and roles and relationships, and as it relates to that person with dementia. And so that affects everyone differently, the spouse, the adult children, grandchildren, siblings, you know, so that's what has drawn me to this field. And that's why I ended up deciding to do both the neurology and psychiatry, so I could really try to address, you know, both the brain, the mind, and the spirit.
What a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Goldfarb, and your inspiration behind your career. There's a lot of terms that are around medical marijuana use that I wonder if you could help define for our listeners. I hear THC, I hear CBD, sativa, indica. Can you help us sort out what do these different terms mean?
Yeah, so it is very confusing, and marijuana is quite a complex plant. So just a little bit of background. So it has over 500 distinct active compounds within the marijuana plant. And 120 of those we call phytocannabinoids. And within that phytocannabinoids, we have THC and CBD. And so those are two of the most abundant in the marijuana plant. And so THC is the substance that, or the component that has this psychoactive property that we might think of as the causing sort of the euphoric high. And this also can precipitate some psychiatric side effects, such as anxiety, paranoia, sometimes psychosis. And also THC is thought to have anti-inflammatory and anti-pain or analgesic, and also anti-nausea kind of properties. Now, whereas CBD or cannabidiol doesn't have those psychoactive properties, doesn't cause that kind of high feeling, and nor does it put one at risk of those psychiatric side effects. And also is thought to have anti-inflammatory, but also antioxidant properties. Now, a lot of the medical marijuana and also recreational marijuana that's coming out is a different combination of these two. And I can get more into that a little bit later about how that relates to what we're looking at in dementia. Now, sativa and indica describe two different strains of the cannabis plant, and including strains that may have medical use. So sativa is the strain that has more energizing experience typically, and more of that talkative euphoric high, and the sativa tends to contain more THC than CBD, whereas indica tends to be more of a relaxing kind of flat experience, and has indica has a higher CBD content than THC. So hopefully then the plants look different, those two, sativa versus indica, the way the leaves look. So that's another way that it's identified.
Thank you for that mini education. We've talked about the history and now the biology just a little bit, but can you share with us what are known to be some of the basic benefits?
Sure. So I'd like to just give a little background on, I think it's helpful to have an understanding of cannabinoids in general, and how these substances specifically medical marijuana, how that affects, how this causes any effects, you know?
Sure.
So in our brains, we have these cannabinoid receptors, mainly CB1 and CB2. There's a lot of CB1 receptors in the brain and CB2 throughout the body. And these regulate many physiologic processes, actually, including appetite, pain, pleasure, the immune system, mood, and memory. The memory centers in the brain, which are called the hippocampus or hippocampi plural, which are in the temporal lobes, those are really full of CB1 receptors. And that's relevant, of course, to our patients who have our individuals with dementia memory loss. Now, what attaches to these or binds to these cannabinoid receptors includes basically three different kinds of cannabinoids. So endocannabinoids are those that we ourselves generate in the brain. And then we have the phytocannabinoids. So those are the plant derived, like we just talked about, like the THC and the CBD from the different, say the sativa and the indica marijuana strains. And then we can have synthetic cannabinoids that are produced in a pharmaceutical lab. And there's a lot of this work going on now, and including a few under investigation for dementia related symptoms. And these non-endocannabinoids, so the plants or the synthetic, often will bind to our cannabinoid receptors much more strongly than those that we generate ourselves. And so it's really an important distinction, I think, to understand that, because so they're much more potent in how they affect us. And when people, you know, sometimes people think, well, it's natural, you know, it's a plant, like it's no problem. It's, you know, it's, and we have these receptors. So the reality is, though, this isn't physiologic to use these, you know, substances. And we have to really be cognizant of that and not assume that they don't have psych potential. They're not basically like medications, and they may have side effects, and they may, like you said, they may interact with other drugs. And that's especially important with our patient population. So older adults who often have medical issues on medications, and maybe with our, you know, individuals with dementia, their brains are much more sensitive to these things. And so we really need to keep track of this when we're considering thinking about what could be the effects of these, specifically the medical marijuana. And so now I forgot your specific question. So what are the effects of these different, is that what you asked?
No, I think that what the direction you're going is so helpful, that we need to realize that there are some benefits and there are some negative side effects. So I'm wondering what the basic benefits that have been found in medical marijuana.
And as it relates to individuals with dementia?
Yes.
Some of the potential benefits of medical marijuana for individuals with dementia seem to be, you know, this really got going, this interest, because of the lack of effective and safe treatments for individuals who have neuropsychiatric symptoms in dementia, such as agitation. So that's such an area of need for good medications. And we know that individuals who have, say, agitation and dementia tend to have a more difficult course with their dementia. They tend to have more hospitalizations, their cognition and function declines faster, their care partners have a much more challenging experience, which often leads to the individual with dementia being placed, you know, in a facility, in a memory care, sooner than those with dementia who don't have these neuropsychiatric symptoms. So really the research on this was inspired by that need, and our current treatments, you know, are either ineffective or are fairly unsafe with, you know, black box warnings. And so medical marijuana does have a better side effect profile than a lot of those stronger medications. And so what has been found is that there's been studies on rodent models, actually, that seem to have potentially and benefit the oxidative stress. So the sort of inflammatory aspects of, say, Alzheimer's disease, they regulate different neurotransmitter systems that are deleterious or detrimental To the brains caused by Alzheimer's disease, and possibly so. These are all in rodents right now. So I switched over to rodents, but they seem to maybe help extend brain cell life and grow brain cells. And so that, in terms of, hasn't yet been completely seen in humans. But what we're looking at in the agitation world is that they do seem to have a calming effect, specifically when used with a combination of THC and CBD. And so it's pretty established that while the THC alone can certainly cause potentially, worsen neuropsychiatric symptoms, cause anxiety, panic, potentially psychosis, with the addition of CBD, that seems to quiet down that risk. And so studies now are moving into phase 3, where we're synthetic cannabinoids, so nabilone is one, and dronabinol have shown that they're both CB1 and CB2 agonists. Those have originally been approved for anorexia and cancer-related nausea and vomiting, and been beneficial for that. So these are showing that there are some benefits, decreases in agitation for individuals with dementia. Now, studies have not so far in humans shown that in individuals with dementia that they have marijuana, either medical plant-derived marijuana or lab-created marijuana, cannabinoids have improved memory or cognition in any way. But studies are certainly still underway to look at that. And other benefits that we're seeing with both medical marijuana and the pharmaceutically created cannabinoids are that this can help sleep duration and also improve eating behavior. So food consumption, which, weight loss can be an issue with our older adults. So a number of positive things we're seeing, but certainly we need some larger, more rigorous studies to feel that confident that we can prescribe these widely.
Dr. Goldfarb, thank you for that rundown of all of the basic benefits. It really seems amazing, but on the flip side of it, it seems really confusing. Mm-hmm. How would you advise a caregiver? How would you advise someone where should they look? Where is there information or a trusted resource? Should they talk to their doctor? How can you help them choose an option that could work for them?
Well, yeah, I would just add, of course, we have to be balanced here. And I just said all the potential benefits that we're still looking to study and know for sure. But I do want to add, before I answer your question, that there are potential downsides to the use of medical marijuana, especially in older adults. And these have to do with medication and potential medication interactions. So marijuana interacts with certain metabolism pathways it's called the P450 system. And so every medication acts on these different aspects of these systems. And so THC works on different ones than CBD does. So what can happen is that use of marijuana can either increase or decrease the available levels of that medication that the person's taking. So for example, warfarin, which is otherwise known as Coumadin, which is a heavy duty blood thinner and anticoagulant, medical or marijuana can increase that level. So it increases the bleeding risk. And also there can be additive effects of using marijuana with different kind of central nervous system depressants, as well as there are cardiac risks. So increased heart rate, blood pressure. There's some limited evidence of linking cannabis use with coronary events, so heart attacks, for example, but that's not clear that there's a connection to that, but some suggestions. So I think it's really important that, the potential benefits are weighed against the potential downsides when someone's thinking about this. But when I have a person with dementia with severe agitation and their care partner sitting in front of me in clinic, and maybe they've tried, the typical medications to help with agitation and nothing's helping. So I might present to them the idea that medical marijuana might be an option because agitation and Alzheimer's disease is an approved indication in Arizona for medical marijuana. But so the way I describe this is that we really don't. So I really can't give specific information at this point and guidance to them as their physician on what, you know, what kind of marijuana, what components, how much THC to CBD, what should be the duration and the frequency, because we really don't have enough good research studies to guide that. We don't have good education available as physicians that we know can be trusted. And so I'm in a tough position because I really want to help my patients and families. And I'm just not able to give them clear, concise information to guide them directly now. And I do want to just add that part of the issue, a major part of the issue why we don't have this information is because of all of the regulations and legal issues regarding marijuana. Is in most states, it's legal, at least for medical use, and many states, of course, for recreational also, but federally it's a Schedule I substance, so it's illegal. And so when you have, say, the National Institute of Health funding many studies on things, they cannot support studies of marijuana because they are a federally funded agency. And there's just a number of different agencies that are needed to go through in order to do any kind of research study with marijuana. And it just creates so many burdens. It's so cumbersome that, you know, of course, many, especially academic centers, aren't going to be able to do that. So also until 2020, if you were going to do research on medical marijuana, there was only one lab that the federal government allowed you to get the marijuana from. And it was in the university. It was at the University of Mississippi. And it's been described as some pretty low quality stuff that was previously frozen and like powder that was sent around. And it really wasn't helpful to propel this research in a meaningful way. So that changed in 2020, where the government is now allowing other kind of companies to produce these the marijuana for the, and so it's regulated. And so it's very different than, say, doing a clinical trial of a pill, where you say, okay, you get the pill, you get the active drug, and you get the placebo, and it's one-to-one, and I can be sure I know where the pill came from, what's in it, versus right now with medical marijuana, we can't know for sure what is in that. It really does present a difficult position. And I think many of us healthcare providers are clamoring for more information. But the first step is really to get the medical marijuana card, which can, I would recommend people in Arizona or go to the Arizona Department of Health Services website. And it right on the top has a place where you click on to apply for your patient or caregiver medical marijuana card. And I'm sure every state has something similar. And there's a lot of other information in there that can be viewed. I would also add that in these conversations I have with my patients and families, many, many individuals who are older, especially, have longstanding entrenched negative views of marijuana, understandably, because that was the common feeling in the 20th century, and it was illegal and criminalized. And so when I really, I present this, I say, you know, this is a controversial topic, but since, you know, we really need some better treatments here, this is an option. And, you know, it's interesting, over time, more and more people are very open to it. And usually they say, yes, my son mentioned that, or a family member. So they've already been thinking about it and heard about it. But I feel like I wish I could give you a better specific answer of where to go, but it's really difficult to do that at this point.
And I thank you for giving us the best answer that you have. And I can see how that could be so difficult for our healthcare providers as well as our caregivers. Yes. Can you tell us about research? You've talked about some barriers. What is on the horizon?
It seems that as more states are legalizing this, certainly I would imagine almost every state has this legalized for medical use. And as the federal government is loosening its restrictions, we would anticipate that this will move down from a Schedule I substance to something that can be more easily researched and studied. in a you know, rigorous way. And so once that door opens, you can imagine there's going to be many, many studies on this, because at the end of the day, the reality is what drives a lot of research is are the potential monetary benefits to these companies, right? And at that, and if you know, I say if this is going to help my patients and families, then like let's do it, you know. And we actually have a study that we're going to be starting up. It's a clinical trial. It should open in the spring of next year for individuals who have dementia with agitation and they are at the end of life, so they're hospice eligible. And so they're not necessarily enrolled in hospice, but they're hospice eligible, meaning they have 6 months or less to live expected. And so they will receive either the medical marijuana via a tincture or an oil, or they would receive the placebo. And it's a pretty short course, I believe 2 weeks of treatment and monitoring for improvement in agitation. So sites like us at Banner Sun Health Research Institute, and this I understand will also be done at Banner Alzheimer's Institute in Tucson, really, really opening up to this where there's such a huge need. And I think this is going to happen in many areas of medicine as well.
That's really exciting news, Dr. Goldfarb, to really kind of be in the forefront of expanding this research. I wonder if you could share, I've heard, you know, the study you're working on is for individuals who are towards the end of life, but what symptoms or stage are you listening for from your families that might indicate that someone could benefit from medical marijuana?
They could really be in any stage. Certain individuals just seem to have a treatment refractory agitation that, you know, this it's really about the dyad, as we call it, it's the patient and the care partner, the person with dementia and the care partner together, and how they're managing whatever symptoms are happening. So when it comes to agitation, you have the person with dementia who has agitation, and then the care partner, different care partners have different abilities and tolerances to work with that agitation. And also, of course, if there's aggression and there's safety risks, that's problematic. And so that can happen at any stage of dementia, frankly. But certainly, I guess I would say we tend to see this more in the late mild and beyond. So maybe on average, the moderate stage when this becomes more of a topic of conversation.
When it becomes a conversation, I can only imagine that this the caregivers might be feeling resistant to using marijuana for their person. How do you talk them through the fact that the research shows that this might be a benefit for the person living with dementia?
If either the person with dementia or the care partner is resistant, I usually start by saying that we've made many advances, especially in the last 20 years, in our understanding of marijuana. And it's a very different world now than it was when they were younger. And so we often now, individuals are no longer smoking marijuana. It's being ingested other ways, which is, you know, much safer to not be inhaling, smoking anything basically, right? Because that's right. Damage your lungs. So, and I try to just shift it right into, we're talking about medical cannabis here. We're not talking about going and getting high with your friends. And the truth is though, usually when this is brought up, the care partner, like you said earlier, they're really at wit's end. They are open and they trust me because we've built up a rapport and I'm pretty open and direct and honest about what we know, what we don't know. And that, frankly, the next step might be a really powerful medication that has a risk of heart attack and stroke, you know? And so medical marijuana at that point does seem more appealing. And even if the worst thing is that it's not going to help at all, at least it's worth going that route before trying these other medications. And so, like I mentioned, I am having less and less resistance, I would say, by all of the individuals involved in the conversation.
Dr. Goldfarb, this has been such an interesting conversation. I wonder, before we close, could you give us your final thought when it comes to marijuana for dementia-related agitation?
There's no magic bullet that we have to be in this field in general. We have to be open-minded and curious, but also skeptical. And so anyone who's considering medical marijuana for their person with dementia needs to really understand and try to know as best they can what would be the best to get the most reliable information, and to try to know and trust where they're getting the actual medication from. And so identifying dispensaries and individuals who are knowledgeable specifically about dementia, so that this can be the safest and best experience for them.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Danielle Goldfarb, a double board certified neurologist and psychiatrist and memory specialist. Thank you so much for helping us untangle the use of medical marijuana with dementia.
Thank you for having me. This has really been a fabulous discussion.
Yes, it has. Thank you so much, Dr. Goldfarb. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.